You have the floor.
What I'd like to discuss with you is how science has a bi-directional relationship to policy. So as we can use science to identify the key areas where new policies might be able to improve health and improve public health outcomes, but we also need to use science to drive those policy changes. So let me show you three examples in the field of addiction where science is needed to inform policies. The first will relate to marijuana. Both in the United States and internationally, we are seeing an evolving set of laws and regulations regarding marijuana, from either decriminalization or de facto legalization to full commercial sales in some areas. And we'll talk a little bit about this. When it comes to e-cigarettes, we've had the development of a remarkably popular set of addictive products. So these are habit-forming nicotine delivery products that are minimally regulated in many parts of the world. And so we need to look at how science can inform the development of reasonable regulations and reasonable approaches. And I'll show you both the potential promise and peril of e-cigarettes. And finally, in the United States, we've had an epidemic of overdoses and deaths related to prescription pills, prescription opioid medications, which of course are life-sustaining when it comes to the treatment of pain and end-of-life care. But when overprescribed and diverted and misused can lead to a population impact in terms of death rates. I want to show you about that as well. So let's go through each one of these very rapidly so we can get to the discussion quickly. Marijuana laws have changed. This is a map of the United States showing the states where marijuana has been legalized for purported medical purposes. It's interesting that we haven't used the medical system, but we've used the legal system to try to make marijuana a medical product in some states. Outlined in purple are where it's fully legalized for commercial recreational use. Now, this is in contradiction to the federal laws, so there is a real contrast between the laws for the whole United States from a federal perspective, but yet our states have their own policies and laws independently of the federal rules and regulations. What we've seen in the U.S., let me show you some of the potential impacts. We've had a terrific improvement in alcohol and tobacco use among youth in America. But what we've seen is that marijuana use rates have been increasing in the last decade or so, so that marijuana use is now more commonly used by teenagers in the United States than tobacco products. Let me say that again. More youth in America are using marijuana than cigarettes. Does it matter? And the answer is yes. There's a myth that marijuana is harmless, but much scientific research would suggest that there are harms associated with marijuana. It's not associated with overdose deaths, and we'll come to that in a few minutes, but it is associated with multiple negative outcomes, particularly when it started early in the teen years and used persistently, whether that's a reduction in completing secondary education, having later issues with addiction to marijuana or other substances, or even an association with suicide attempts. There's some very interesting data to suggest that heavy, regular users of marijuana who continue to use from their teenage years throughout their adult life may even experience a drop in their intelligence, a drop in their cognitive performance. All right, so that's number one. The environment is changing around marijuana, and we need research to help inform how we can make wise decisions about that. The second area relates to e-cigarettes, which are a markedly popular product in the United States as elsewhere in the world. And I'd suggest that there are two areas of e-cigarette use that are interesting. One is they may be very useful products for people who are confirmed smokers that want to quit and can't quit using other techniques. But the concern is we're not just limiting these products to adults who smoke heavily. They're also being used by teenagers. The most recent data that I have up there on the slide shows you that e-cigarettes are now more popular than combustible tobacco among teenagers. A very recent longitudinal study showed that those that start with e-cigarettes when they're 14 years old are more likely to progress to regular combustible tobacco a year later. So it may be an entree into an addictive pattern related to a very dangerous and lethal substance. Just published last week was a report suggesting that flavorings may be a key issue in terms of the first use of tobacco products, where some 80% of e-cigarette users use flavored products to begin with. Now, the real issue is that nicotine can particularly influence the adolescent brain. It upregulates certain genetics, particularly the ARC gene is one that's quite famous, which is involved in synaptic development. It also enhances response to all drugs of abuse. So nicotine during puberty may enhance the response to other drugs. So neuroscience plays a role in helping us understand how puberty or adolescent onset of these drugs is a key role. All right, so we've talked about marijuana briefly and the importance of policy related to that. We've talked about e-cigarettes and the need for reasonable regulation and policy in that domain. Now, the last area I want to talk to you about is overdose deaths. Now, this doesn't look like overdose deaths. This publication that came out yesterday shows us that for white non-Hispanic persons in middle age, between 45 and 54 years old, their longevity, their death rates have been rising in the last 15 years in the United States. That's the red line. People are dying earlier in the United States than ever before if they're in that age group. This is in contradiction to all the Western European and countries as well as Australia, and it's different than other ethnic and racial groups in the United States. What's going on here? The major causes are drug overdose, alcohol-related conditions, and suicide as the three primary factors that these researchers identified as being related to this increasing mortality. What we've seen in the US is a remarkable increase in prescriptions for opioids and a resulting increase in overdose deaths, where we now have some 40,000 deaths from drug overdose each year in the United States. That's many more deaths from overdose than we have from car accidents. My key message is that drug abuse and drug addiction are quintessential biopsychosocial disorders. It's both having the innate propensity to use these substances, it's part of our biological makeup, but it takes the environment to really shape these behaviors, whether that's the family environment, the neighborhood environment, or the policy environment. And policies can be both deleterious in the case of excess availability of opioids, but they can also be very helpful in terms of setting up a regulatory or policy environment that can minimize these problems. I look forward to discussing this with you.